Welcome to Church Drunk, a spirited conversation about faith, reason, and libations. As usual, all of the advisories apply. We are cursy, sweary, bad people who blaspheme and whatnot. If you're one of us, you know,
here's to you.
Best club ever. If you're not, then look elsewhere for your spiritual guidance. Maybe if you are, look elsewhere for your spiritual guidance.
Actually, nobody should take spiritual guidance. More like spiritual commiserating, and commiserators are welcome.
Right.
Yeah.
So, this is Church Drunk. We are foul-mouthed. We are Catholic, but you don't have to be. We're just glad you're here. I am Guess, here with my wonderful co-host, Dizzy.
Ooh, Happy New Year.
Diz, what are you drinking?
I am sipping some celebratory bubbles. I'm still ringing in the new year.
Yeah.
It is Gloria Ferrer bubbles, which are liturgically appropriate. Like Gloria.
Gloria Ferrer.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. So
nice.
some champagne bubbles. And what about you, dear guest?
I am drinking the gifts of the Magi. Well-known fact that you could actually just drink gold, frankincense, and myrrh. So what we have is about 2 ounces of gold tequila, thus the gold.
The gold. Got it.
A dash of bitters.
Okay.
So that apparently represents the myrrh.
Myrrh,
because
which
myrrh
means bitter.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It comes from the root for bitter. And then frankincense is represented by some simple syrup and lemon. So
okay.
A little lemon simple syrup combo gives it a little extra fragrance, little frankincense-iness.
Mm-hmm. Apparently frankincense does smell citrusy. I wouldn't really know.
Yeah.
But
I mean, I've smelled it. I wouldn't call it citrusy, like, off the top of my head, but I wouldn't really call any incense pleasant,
yeah.
So that's just me.
Okay, well, how's the drink, though? How's the cocktail?
It's good. It's actually quite tasty. I was surprised. Usually I'm more of a tequila blanco kind of guy, as opposed to an añejo sort of a drinker, but this one's nice.
And
so
you kept in the spirit, the gold.
Yeah,
is
exactly.
There.
So right. It's got our gold, our frankincense, and our myrrh in a glass, and it goes down smooth.
Yeah.
Mm.
So pour yourself a glass of something and join us today as we discuss those gifts. We're almost to this feast day of the church, the feast of the Epiphany.
So we are on the eve
of
the 12th day of Christmas, right? And
yeah.
So this is
now we know what all those mean, pop quiz.
Exactly. And apparently, little known fact that we discovered as we were kind of researching for this episode, the 12th night is like a reference to the 12 days of Christmas.
Yeah, and like the celebrations, because people, like, probably medieval times were celebrating those whole 12 days. And
right, so you would celebrate all 12
days
of Christmas and on the eve of the Epiphany, which they would call the 12th night. It was a night to celebrate Jesus entering the world, like God coming into the world in the form of a baby, which was kind of like this absurd flip-flop,
right?
The most powerful being that we can conceive of coming as like this weak little tiny thing in a manger. And so what would, like, how do they celebrate this dichotomy?
They would flip anything. So it was like the kids could be in charge instead of the adults, and the women could dress up as men and vice versa.
Yeah.
Right. So like just anything.
Servants dressing up as servants giving commands like masters,
right.
Or masters dressing up like servants, things like that. Yeah. So kind of like a topsy-turvy, everything gets flipped upside down.
How catechetical.
Right.
Really.
Yeah.
It keeps that essence.
Totally.
Yeah. Pretty
and I'm
good.
Sure that we would have a really educated conversation right now at this point about the 12th night play by Shakespeare. Had either of us ever
read it
or seen the play,
and
or
even
done
knowing
anything
that we were doing this bothered to. So I think that says something about where our literary track runs.
Yeah.
Somehow
classics, not really a strong suit for us.
Yeah, I think Shakespeare, man, there's like a kind of a gaping bard size hole, but oh well.
I think I've seen Midsummer Night's Dream like 4 times, but
never seen
any other plays. Oh, yeah. No, well, I've watched
a lot of
Hamlet.
Macbeth,
watched
a lot of Hamlet.
I think I watched Merchant of Venice as a movie, but Twelfth Night, totally foreign to me as far as Shakespeare.
Yeah.
But apparently it was a holiday play, or they think it was a holiday play on account of the title.
Hey, well, good for them.
Yeah. If you're out there, listener of ours, then let us know what if you have some Twelfth Night knowledge to drop.
Or should we bother reading it? You know, would we,
yeah,
would
is
we
it a good one
it?
If
yeah,
you're a Shakespeare
let us know.
Fan?
We are that lazy.
Yeah.
All right. So 12th night is nice, but we're actually also wanting to celebrate another feast today, the Epiphany.
We're much more familiar with this.
Which represents the three wise men, or the three kings, bringing gifts to that little juxtaposition of God, baby
Correct.
Jesus.
Right, little baby Jesus.
And, you know, they're traveling, and it takes them a little while to get there. So that's part of the whole story. And I like that tradition where, like, families, like, move the Magi, towards, like, keep that Christmas going.
I noticed that, actually, and I don't know if my parish has done this before, and I just didn't pick up on it, but when we went to Christmas Eve Mass this year, I noticed that the Magi were actually all the way on the opposite side of, the sanctuary from where the typical little nativity scene was.
Right, so they're still journeying.
They were on the way.
They're following the star. And actually, I think, I want to say it was National Geographic, but there's been some, like, scientific study of, like, would there have been a really bright star around 4 to 6 BC?
Because if you can, for a moment, suspend the disbelief that, like, you know, God becomes man and all of those kinds of things, right? Which, you know, like, I think that's our job to suspend that disbelief, you know.
We have chosen the season.
But, so, Jesus, born in a manger to, you know, humble beginnings, all that kind of stuff. And, oh, by the way, there's, like, a supernova overhead. And somewhere across the land, these three guys are, like, studying all of the texts and being like, aha, that tells us that God has been born.
Like, what is here it? Like, is
the King of Kings? I don't think that they really know who they're looking for starters.
But they're following something. Yeah. I don't know. It's kind of a nice story, though.
This is the part in the zombie movie, you know, where something happens and somebody looks and goes, oh, well, you could never run that fast in real life. You know, you're like, okay, all right. I mean, we're
already living in fantasy. But they're magical wise kings.
Right, yes.
Or something.
Who have read the stars.
Yeah.
And found out that baby Jesus is God.
And they're coming to acknowledge
him.
Which, you know, if that happened, must have been a relief to Mary to be like, good, I'm getting some reinforcement here that this is the real deal.
See, I always kind of imagine Mary when the Magi show up looking at them being like, seriously? We've been here for like 2 weeks? The shepherds were here on the very first night. Where the fuck were you guys?
Like, yeah, but they're like smelly and like lame. Like, the shepherds were like over the hill.
Yeah.
Like, these are kings. They're bringing gifts.
Yeah. Well, are they? So we call them the three kings.
Or
the three wise men.
Right.
The three magi, right? So are they magicians? Are they kings? Are they just smart people?
Yeah. I mean, tradition says different things. Yeah. The gospels say different things about them or don't talk about them at all. But so one thing is, like, there's Zoroastrian priests, kings
could be,
from Sheba, Tarsus, and Saudi Arabia.
Right, reading like the Eastern texts and figuring out. Do they come together? Like, are they a team, or do they arrive independently?
Our other gospel that we subscribe to, which is Lamb, the gospel according to Biff, has them as kind of separate entities.
Right, they're sort of all...
They do know of one another.
Right, yeah,
so
they show up around the same
time. Christopher
Moore
knows this, apparently.
Yeah, and that's so... And Christopher Moore goes with the three names that I have become most familiar with because of his book.
Right.
Balthasar, Gaspar, and Melchior, right?
Right.
So, but there's a, like, is it Gaspar? Is it Casper? Like, you hear both?
And Jasper comes from
Jasper,
that name.
Exactly.
So it's, you know, it's a name that implies riches.
I did not know that.
Yeah, yeah. It means, I think it's some treasure etymology there. Hmm. So who knows, but
I have questions.
Enough.
I have questions
a lot
about
of questions.
The Magi.
Yeah, I don't, you're probably not going to get an answer to those.
Yeah.
But I like the names as well.
Because also, if they're not a team, right?
Mm-hmm.
How would they have all shown up with these three gifts that, like, together equal...
It's almost like the story works a little too well.
Yeah. Things get fishy.
So maybe they did collaborate, because the three things that they are, you know, legended to bring are gold,
frankincense,
and myrrh, as you mentioned earlier with the cocktail recipe, and they represent different things. So gold representing like a king's wealth.
Yeah, it's what you bring to a king, right? So when the king is born, you bring him gifts of gold, which also I find absurd because kings already have gold, right?
Yeah, like, but it's like you're worth gold. Like,
and I guess if you are a king, the three kings, you bring another king gold.
Yeah. I mean, it's not all they bring. They bring some dark gifts, too.
They do, actually, yeah.
Next.
So there's frankincense, which is kind of like this incense used at all the religious ceremonies and things like that. So talking about the sort of priestly role that Jesus is going to play.
Yeah, and using like smoke to commune with the gods, like burning things to commune with the gods.
Right.
Goes across many religions, so not just Judaism.
Totally.
You know, that's a commonly held belief that, like, nice burning shit that goes up to God, like, tells God something.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or whatever God you believe.
And we still use frankincense in some of our Catholic religious ceremonies today. So, So we have gold for a king, we have frankincense for a priest, and the last one.
Dun, dun, dun.
Everybody's favorite, they don't know what the hell it is.
Myrrh.
Yeah. So myrrh is basically like it's used in funeral rites.
Mm-hmm.
So it's part of the process of preparing a body for, being entombed. And so it's kind of this foretelling of this road ahead for Jesus that it's not going to be, I mean, I guess in one regard, like
strong smelling, like
everybody dies. Right. And so by taking on human form,
yes.
God is going to have to go through this process of death.
Yeah. It's
in
a little
God's
foreshadowing.
But I mean, in terms of Jesus, there's that sense of the prophecy that he will die and rise on the third day. Right. So
that's
the third role of Jesus. Kind of traditionally, we talk about Jesus
the
as
bitter herb.
Priest, prophet, and king. And so the gift of myrrh is kind of that gift of the prophecy symbol.
Yes. And the priestly one was the frankincense. Okay.
Yeah.
So those are nice gifts.
Lovely. Very expensive, apparently.
Yeah. I mean, worth the trip.
Somebody brought me frankincense. I'd be like, what the hell?
I mean, I guess we see frankincense in the, like,
in the thing. There's some hand motions going on right
in
now. You
incense.
Can't see them.
But I think, is that what they also put in, like, the oil to make the oil smelly, like in the chrism oil?
I think so.
So it's kind of piney scented, actually.
Yeah.
But anyway, so we have that, which is a nice enough gift.
Yeah, there's obviously...
better to drink, probably.
Lots of gold when you, like, walk into... certain churches, not all of them are like bedazzled, but I certainly remember walking into St. Peter's Basilica for the first time being like, what the? There are a lot of poor people like outside on the street and lot of gold inside this building right now.
You know, that's like always the argument of people in and without and out of the church.
Totally.
Who are like, why don't you sell all those like,
you
know, priceless art pieces and your gold for the poor? You know, and like the other side says, well, that wouldn't really solve
the problem.
It's a
Band-Aid solution, right?
Yeah, it doesn't actually fix it. And then we would have nothing beautiful to look at, which is also something that everyone can enjoy.
Helps us connect with God when there is beauty.
Yeah. So I don't know. That's a whole other subject. But if Jesus was born today.
Right.
In some.
Which we don't know. I mean.
Census taking town, which could be anywhere.
The sense is that the second arrival of the Messiah will not be quite so. Bucolic as the first one.
Won't be this lovely.
Yeah, it's not going to be the Holy Family surrounded by goats and camels and wise men with gifts. It's going to be a little bit more catastrophic. But imagine for a moment that.
But what if? What if? Yeah,
what if the second coming looks similar to the first?
Yeah, suppose that. Or even like if the first were to happen today.
Mm-hmm,
you know, if Jesus is born to some high school girl in some horrible little town.
Yeah.
Outside of a major city. Essentially what we would be looking for, I suppose.
Probably in a state that rhymes with, like, Shmalamama.
I was totally thinking. or a mountain region that rhymes with Acha. But, all right, so what would we bring him? Like, if the kings were coming, the wise men were arriving from distant lands to follow his star.
So in this scenario, we are further suspending disbelief by thinking of ourselves as wise people.
Right. That is not true. But we could imagine, like, if they were coming, if it wasn't even us.
Okay, so
what would be the modern equivalent?
Oh, see, I don't know. This may ruin my answers, because I was definitely thinking of it in terms of, like, if I were a wise man. Although, I guess it still applies.
If I were a wise man.
It still applies, because I think, basically, the way that I was approaching this question was, the three gifts that were presented by the Magi were both gifts and sort of challenges, you know, like... Here are the three things.
They're sort of omens.
The three roles that you are going to have to play, right? We need you to be a priest, a prophet, and a king. So we brought you the gifts that would foretell of that, prepare you for that.
And maybe, steer you the way we want you to go a little bit.
Exactly, right?
All right.
So I was thinking
about
in terms
of that either.
If I were to choose three roles or three things that I thought were important to convey, right? So, for again, suspending disbelief, how self-important am I right now that I'm like, oh, the Messiah has been born. Let me go bring him some presents to tell him what to do. Or her, if we're talking about the second coming.
Whoa, I guess it is a whole flip it on its head kind of
it
day,
is. It's
guess.
It is, 12th night.
Whoa, 12th night.
But it's a little presumptuous
it
of
is,
the wise
it's
men.
It's super presumptuous, and that's why they're imaginary figures in the story.
Mm-hmm,
That was written much long after.
Right.
So, you know, my disbelief just crashed down a little bit
there. I know, jeez.
Sorry.
Bursting bubbles left and right.
But it's a fine thing for us to suppose. Like, what would... be the modern equivalents, yes. or like, what would you like Jesus to do today? Right. Although I agree with you, I don't want to be that arrogant to be like, Jesus, here's my to-do list for you. Yeah. Thanks for coming.
Right. I thought I should probably back up and bring three gifts that represent my humility and my inability my to tell the Messiah what to do. But assuming we could do it as the wise men.
Sure.
The first thing that popped into my head was, I don't know if you read about this in the last few days, those just fucking awful Trump coins that the president has made.
No, I've been blissfully unaware of this.
Okay.
Which will tie into one of my resolutions later.
For the benefit of Dizzy and anybody out there who has not heard about this, every president has, they call it a challenge coin or something like that.
Hear about
and it's
this.
Like any people who go visit the president, you know, like they get this coin as part of their like visit or things like that, right? He can hand them out when he goes to different places. And since this tradition became part of the White House, they tend to have been either silver or bronze and like relatively subdued. And they always have the E Pluribus Unum motto on them, you know, just kind of like,
so like there's like an established format,
simple token that you can hand out. Right. And every president does get to pick
it's like commemorate
his own
somebody's
design.
Visit with you or something.
Right.
Okay.
So Trump's challenge coin has come out and it is, thicker, like twice as thick as the average.
It's huge.
It's girthy. And it is, it has a banner across the bottom, so it's no longer just a round one. It's gold, so it's like huge and gold and has the president's name on it. He's gotten rid of E Pluribus Unum.
Oh, God.
Replaced it with Make America Great Again, of course.
MAGA.
So hashtag MAGA. And has the president's name on it. Four times. There's only two sides on a coin. And it's got Donald Trump's name on it four times. So the first thought that I had was that I would bring this to, like, basically the equivalent of gold, right? But I would bring him this little gold, not even a coin because it has a banner on the bottom, and just be like, fix it. Like,
hi, Jesus. Thanks for coming. Can you please make this better? Thanks.
Right. So not necessarily the role of a king, but a president.
Okay.
Or perhaps a prime minister. We don't really have a lot of kings anymore, and I don't think that I would want the Messiah to be a king. Like, kings are not appointed by the people.
Right.
So, well, one could make an argument that neither was Donald Trump, but,
gosh. More drink. Alcohol for me. Drink. Yeah, so.
So, like, this coin that says you will be someone that is of power, but also, like, power sucks right now, so it's time to, like, make it better. Make power great again.
I like that you really stuck with, like, our current model and, like, wanting to fix that, because as I reviewed the gifts that I would bring, our dear Lord and Savior, I have to say my heart is apparently a little rogue, because I think gold represents, you know, financial power or money power, like worldly power.
Right, yes, yes.
And I was like, you know, I feel like Bitcoin is most appropriate. Like, I think the Lord and Savior needs a vast account filled with imaginary Bitcoins with which he can rule not only the world above, but the world below, the dark web, as well as the human
escape. I love it.
That is what we need, is goodness all over the place. So I would like him to take over from the you know, rogue side, and you're trying to fix the presidency, which I've apparently given up completely open.
I don't know which one of those I would slap out of someone's hand first if they were to, like, present. I don't even know would you just give him, like, a cell phone and be like, I'm giving you imaginary funds.
I would give him
funds.
His accounts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, here's a password.
Here's his login. I guess a laptop.
I don't know how Bitcoin works, but anyway.
There's a dark web.
Yeah,
that's how it works.
Well, we know that much.
People are taking it. It's a real thing.
I know. It's weird.
It's not a real thing, but it is real.
I don't trust it.
Just like
the
Magi.
Yeah, right.
All right. So,
okay. So we both went gold for the first one.
Yep.
That took vastly different tacks. Okay. Fair enough.
And that was the one that's king. All right. So how about, let's go priest next?
Yeah, priest.
Not get too dark. So priest was frankincense.
And I kind of was trying to think about, like, from a religious perspective, who would I want this person to be and how would I symbolize that? And one of the images that came to mind was kind of those prayer flags, right? Like the Tibetan prayer flags.
Oh, yes. Beautiful.
And in a perfect world, I'd love to get them from, like, somewhere. Like I always imagine them, like, flying, you know, like, I mean, in my backyard, which is where I have put them up. But also, like on top of, you know, Mount Everest and places like where there is both that sense of, like, worldly vastness, but also they represent something much larger than that. And I would want to reach beyond the boundaries of, like, sort of my little Catholic Christian sphere and be like, we need a Messiah that's going to be for everybody, which was a big part of what Jesus did the first time.
And that's around, very Jewish of you, know? Right? Yeah. That this would be the king of all.
The king of all, right? Yes. And a priest for all. But, you know, like somewhat like those flags are something that people who are both very religious and very non-religious, they find meaning in that. So I thought it would be kind of like a universal symbol for what a priest for all would be.
I like that. Yeah. Kind of similarly, but maybe more within our own tradition. I thought for the priestly one, I would bring him or would like to give him
a little teeny tiny Roman collar,
a cup of something good. So I was like, not a chalice, because I'm really still pissed off about the fucking chalice word being so important in English, but a cup of something good. Like, I would like to, and it would be something boozy when he's big enough to have it be boozy. Right. When he's little baby Jesus, it could be like, you know, hot chocolate or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, and just to represent like that part of our faith, which is the sharing of a meal. And then also kind of the dark side of like, here, you have to drink from this cup, right? Like to be with us in it, like sharing of a cup. Yeah, that's a communal thing.
Very symbolic.
It's like, come with us into this, but also like there's good things in your cup.
I like it.
So, you know, I would like to have a drink with the grown up Jesus, maybe right before he starts his ministry. Yeah. I feel that he would be a dude you could have a little share a cup with.
Yeah. What was the legal drinking age in like first
probably
century
like 10.
Galilee.
I mean, they're you know, little boys are grown up right away. 12 or 13, so totally.
Yeah,
probably just rub
you
it on
have
their
to
gums.
Wait that long. Yeah,
yeah. I don't know what kind of alcohol they had. Oh, we should do a study. What alcohol was around in a first century Nazareth?
Well, we know there was wine.
Yeah,
Mary loved it.
Yeah, bitter wine.
Yeah. All right. So moving on to prophet.
Okay.
What is the gift that we would bring to a prophet? And actually, I kind of went with a similar idea as your priest gift.
Okay.
I was like, all right, so a prophecy of who, like the difficult path that lays before the Messiah.
Yes.
And I kind of went to the man of the people route, you know, like, I mean, because I'm not one to say like, hey, you're going to hang on a cross or whatever the modern day equivalent would be of that. Like, hopefully if it's a second coming, then we wouldn't see that happening again, but who knows? Maybe the rest of us are going to hang on a cross. Who knows?
Yeah, well, it's all shockingly possible.
When I thought about the two gifts that I had already thought of, Trump coin, Tibetan prayer flag, obviously opposite ends of the spectrum there. What's missing from that? And also, what would prophecy who I wanted this Messiah to be in a perfect world? And I thought, what's missing is booze.
Yes.
And B, what kind of booze would a man of the people drink? So I went moonshine. Like I thought I was going through a lot of different types, and I was like, okay, well, like Irish whiskey is what I would drink at a wake, you know, so that would be kind of in line with myrrh.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, you know, like I want him to just be a man of the people, which is not an easy thing to be right now, but still maintain a sense of power and authority. So, you know, born in a stable in Schmalish Mama, drink some moonshine. Here is like a mason jar of moonshine.
And like the guy who can like hold his moonshine like deserves respect. Like I feel like that is like the guy you hang out with. But also you're like, yes, Jesus, you can drink moonshine and we still like you.
So in order to get my three gifts, I need to go to the White House, the top of Mount Everest, and somewhere in the backwoods where they're like making legit moonshine. So
sounds like
go.
You have quite a quest.
Right, yeah.
All right, well, for prophet, for me, I kind of focused on, like, the prophetic message, like the mouthpiece, but also kind of that dark foreshadowing, but I went more of a figurative way on this.
Okay.
And much like my gift of Bitcoin on the little Lord Jesus' new shiny laptop will be his, like, vast social media accountings.
Oh,
so, like,
God.
He is going to take down the Trump with his own Twitter handle.
Oh, man.
Like, Jesus's Twitter will be epic.
At the real Jesus Christ.
At the real Jesus Christ, like, a little check mark and everything. But, like, his Instagram will be beautiful and inspiring.
Oh,
and, like, you know, he'll use it for good.
Okay.
And bring all the peoples of the world together. Much as the internet can do.
Can do.
Like, we learn about a lot of things that we wouldn't from the world. Like, you know, it has helped people. There's some justice-y things with the internet.
There are a lot of uses for good.
I just thought of him as, like, a really modern guy. Like, so he needs, like, a smartphone, and he needs all his social media accounts, and to make those things new.
Totally.
Much as we want him to make all things new, including the horror that can be social media.
Yeah.
Jesus will make that new. I know it's not who you want him to be, but he would have to be that guy.
A social media crusader.
I think he would use that as a mouthpiece. I think he would use everything available to him.
Or would it be the role of the new apostles to do that? Because Jesus, maybe. I mean, like, I guess Jesus gathered people together, like, on the mountaintop, like, which would be kind of the equivalent of, like, social media back in the day.
And also, when he's, like, there and needs some fish and bread, it would be a quick, like, hey, who's got some? And they'd all just, like, bing, 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 bing. But, you know, you can also die a horrible
Bitcoin
social...
Bitcoin you my loaves and fishes.
Yeah, that's where Bitcoin runs out right there. Delivery... to the
DoorDash. He's just going to DoorDash it. Oh, man.
But, you know, you can die a horrible social media death as well. Like, people live and die on that. So
for sure. For sure. Oh, wow. I didn't even think about that
like
level.
His,
yeah.
Like, can you imagine, like, somebody live tweeting the Passion?
Right.
I mean, that's a whole level.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's good or bad.
We officially need to write a movie script based on these gifts, I think. I think that there is a future for these stories.
We'll have to see how it goes the next time.
Christopher Moore, if you're out there.
Yes.
Gospel According to Biff, Volume 2.
Incorporate
our gifts.
He sold it to Disney. Remember, he can't touch that. But maybe he could write some new Magi stories.
Yeah, something different.
All right. Well, we'd love to hear what would you give the little Lord Jesus, if you, dear listener, were going to give him something in this supposition of ours. And as we look at this new year, we thought, I'm not really a big resolutions person. Are you?
I hadn't even thought about it until we talked about it in preparation for this. Like, I had no resolutions.
But it seems appropriate. Like, we all have a lot of hope for 2018 to suck even a fraction less than 2017.
We tend to live our lives by the liturgical calendar, so we kind of do things for Advent and things for Lent.
Right.
But not necessarily, like, New Year's Day, January 1st resolutions.
True.
It is a new calendar year, and it is certainly time to turn the page to 2018.
Yeah, it's a good... I'm not against resolutions.
No.
It just hasn't been a practice.
Yeah.
So we thought we'd try to set a couple for ourselves and also for Mother Church.
Yes.
Yeah. So what do you got? You got a personal resolution?
Yeah. So, I mean, you know me. Like, 9 times out of 10, you ask me, like, what are you doing for Advent? What are you doing for Lent? What's your resolution? What do you want to do more of?
Yeah.
And it's going to be something where it's like, I'm going to read and then insert whatever.
Yep.
So my first thought was read. It's been a while since I read, like, a work of theology. I think the last, like, truly theological book that I read was Interior Castle, St. Teresa of Avila, which I love, right? And I enjoy it every time I do it, but it takes me longer than, like, a regular novel to just kind of work through it. So I haven't picked up a work of real theology lately in the last few months. So I think maybe reading something theological to kind of start out the year would be a good place to start. And then I thought maybe something from Francis. I haven't.
Okay.
The only thing that I've read of Pope Francis, like, actually sat down and read, is Laudato Si.
There's
plenty to choose from. Yeah.
Well, that's a good goal.
So that's one.
Kind of we're on the same track here, because I had put down for myself to read more actual books of substance. Because I have become, like, an addict to the Audible, to the listening to books. And because of how my brain works, I can really go through a lot of those, but I can't do very, like, challenging books listening. Like, I really need to actually read them. And so my challenge to myself is to read some real things, not just escapist things by listening to them, but actually read some real books of substance. Whether that be theological substance or just other substance that will kind of make my brain work a little bit. And
I've noticed that my books in you know, probably second half of 2017 became very, like, escapist.
Yeah.
You know, like, it was just something that I could kind of chew through that would entertain me, that I didn't have to, like, think too much.
Yeah, I have bulldozed a lot of fantasy novels that I would never actually sit and bother to read, but, like, don't mind having on in the background. Like, I live my life so I don't have to think about things.
Right.
Which isn't a bad thing. Like, I'm sure there's way less healthy ways to escape.
Totally.
Here, where's my glass?
Totally,
but,
yeah.
You know, I want to read some actual books.
Yeah, for sure.
Thinky ones.
All right, so we're both on the same track there for New Year's resolution. Yeah, we totally can. If you guys have suggestions out there,
let us
hit
know.
Us up
what's a real thing?
Yeah, Twitter or email us or whatever. But then I also had a resolution for the church. Did you have one for
one for the
church. So resolutions for Mother Church. This is kind of like the Magi assigning roles to the higher ups.
Once
but
again,
still.
Our hubris is showing.
Yeah. Would you like to go?
Sure. Well, you know, for mine, it wasn't terribly specific, but I want to Pope Francis to keep moving the direction that he's going.
Yes.
I don't want him to lose steam. I want him to keep cleaning house and reassigning the people who need to be reassigned.
Right.
And kind of double down on the great house cleaning of the church. And I almost wanted to put, I want a new council. Like, I feel like we're gearing up with the synods and for these big meetings. Like, I think I want that progress to keep moving.
Yeah.
I don't want to see any backsliding. And I feel like we're all always on the edge of that, and there's been a few things that made me feel more that way. So I'm like, keep moving the right people in the right positions and ignore the fools. Like, you know, these guys who have written this dubia and called him into question? Like, fuck those guys. Like, keep going in the right direction, Pope Francis.
Well, and it did, you know, like, at first when, you know, Francis was named Pope and he chose a new name that had never been chosen before and things like that, and there was a lot of buzz about, is this the sign that there's going to be a new Vatican Council? A new, you know, is there going to be something big that happens? And then everybody kind of was like, well, we haven't even really done Vatican II yet, right? Like, we haven't officially done the things that that council calls for.
Yeah.
But then in the blowback against Francis's kind of progressive agenda, there has been this, like, well, Vatican II is not even valid. Like, we're not, like, they're all of a sudden masses in Latin again, like, and there's really all this stuff going
on. Right, people are pushing against it, and
so maybe, like, originally I was in the camp of, like, let's just do Vatican II. Like, let's just officially make sure that that is instituted, but now I'm like, nope, fuck it. Like, if this is the way people are going to react, then the only way to send the message that going backwards is not an option is to say, we're going to have Vatican III.
Like, yeah, I want to see it come through with, like, the continued modernization of the church.
Right,
and speaking to the current times.
I hear you.
That's what I want. Well, how about you?
That's a lofty goal. That's a big one for the church to try and tackle, and I would love to see it happen. Mine's a little bit more basic, right?
Realistic.
Like getting back to essentials. It's a two-part resolution for the church. Part A, stop buggering boys. Like, just stop doing that. Because the fact that we still are reading news stories about priests and people in
all
positions of power in the church that are using that power for this really, really evil thing of you know, targeting children is just not okay. Like, we need to stop reading those stories. Well, we need to stop reading them because they don't exist anymore.
Yes.
Yeah, not just stop reading them. So stop buggering boys. And number two, kind of part of that, I think I just said A, stop buggering boys, and now number two, but whatever.
Part B,
I get upset about it.
As you should.
A, stop buggering boys. B, put some distance between us and the church that had that going on. So, you know, just recently there was the whole controversy over Cardinal Law, who was, by most accounts, not a buggerer of boys, but somebody who was still not a good man.
No, he was complicit. And, like, if we as a church want to talk about structural sin and have all of these wonderful teachings, we have to walk that talk.
Totally.
And that's what you're saying.
So we need to put some distance between ourselves and the bad men. And if that means punishing the bad men or breaking with tradition. And this is one of the things that we talked about that was a little bit of a letdown. Maybe the first time since Pope Francis was named Pope that we kind of felt like, like there was a bit of a swing and a miss on that one, or no swing at all.
Right.
That was a called strike, just watching the pitch go by.
Yeah.
Because there was a chance to step up and say, Cardinal Law is not going to get the normal cardinal treatment because his record does not really speak to that of someone that we want to hold up as a model of faith in St. Peter's Basilica with a full funeral service.
Right.
And he got all that anyway.
Yeah, and I think it was disappointing because we see Francis as, like, this pope who has, you know, chosen to wear, like, a simple garb, right? His outfit, he's not doing the whole, he's got the simple pope mobile. Like, he's really stripped himself down, and he's asked these guys to do the same where they can, but he hasn't forced them to. And this was kind of more of that, where it's like, yeah, like, I get that, but this guy was dead, and he did not need to have the princely funeral.
Yeah.
Because that hurt people.
Yeah.
And I know it would have upset other people, but kind of too bad, like, be on the right side of history. Like,
certainly a complex issue.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, so much history there, and all of the different, like, different parties that would have had a vested interest one way or the other. But I think when the rubber hits the road, we really have to put some distance between the church that was allowing all those things to happen and the church that, moving forward, is going to have a real strong stance that it's not going to be a shelter for the bad men.
We've got to walk that talk. Yeah. I agree. Well, those are good goals for ourselves and for the church.
Yeah,
and
I think you know, the ones for us, we can certainly do. The ones for the church, we'll just cross our fingers and keep doing what we do. And
it's good that we have high hopes, though.
Yes.
I mean, we don't want to aim too low.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and you think about if we were having this conversation 10 years ago, our resolutions for the church would have been, well, mine probably would have been the same.
I was going to say, part A would have still been the same. Quit buggering boys and or anybody you're not supposed to be buggering.
But in terms of our hopefulness for the church to actually do something about some of the issues that were that they were facing internally, I don't know that we would have been quite so hopeful. So, you know, there's reason to think that maybe good changes are still on the horizon.
I agree. Yeah. We can always have hope. Well, so that brings us kind of, got anything else?
I mean, no, I think that, that pretty well wraps us up for Epiphany and New Year's resolutions and a start to 2018.
So, once again, tell us what we should read or what you would bring the baby Jesus. You could tweet at guests at churchdrunkpod.
Yeah, or email us, churchdrunk@gmail.com. Hit us up in the comments section on the blog. Yeah. Do whatever you got to do.
Let us know.
Yeah. Just call us, you know, whatever.
Give us a shout out. All right.
But we'd certainly love to hear from you guys, and we will be back next week as we continue season 3 of Church Drunk.
Hey, Church Drunk.
Church Drunk, where we always enjoy the gifts of our three wise men.
Jack.
No, not Jim. Jim and Jack are redundant.
Okay, fine. Go ahead. Jack.
Jack. Johnny.
And Jose.
All right. See you guys
Drinks
later.
Up. Peace.